Go ahead.
Okay, great. I'll do the introduction. So we're so lucky today. We have our speaker, Regina, will share her recovery journey, and then she'll guide us through a study of, which is it, Regina?
It's the preface.
The preface today. Great. She'll be referring to our big book, Eating Disorders Anonymous, and she'll provide page references as indicated. There'll be time for questions and member sharing after Regina finishes. Some members find that the book is much easier to follow if using a paper version of the book. So if you only have the book on an electronic device, you may prefer to just listen. So now, Regina, go ahead.
Thank you, Kim, and thank you for everyone for being here and for the readers. So I first want to say that I'm nervous, a little nervous, which is unusual for me because I know my story, so I didn't have to memorize any lines. A little nervous. And here we go, with God. Let's see. I'm not someone who feels that they were born with an eating disorder. I had a loss, a bad loss experience when I was about 18 years old. And that day, I started eating things that I didn't normally eat, and I continued with greater intensity and volume and craziness for 10 years. So I was very active in my eating disorder for 10 years. It started out on kind of healthy things. And well, this all started with my doctor putting me on a very rigid diet to address a very serious health problem. And I just did it because that's what normal people do, right? The doctor says, eat like this. So I just ate like this for 3 years. And that day that I had the traumatic experience and I went off of that eating plan, I lost all control. So I guess my eating disorder was waiting for me. And it started out with eating like things that are relatively healthy and ended up at 7-Eleven at 2 o'clock in the morning. And if you don't know what 7-Eleven is, it's basically your corner. I remember, in a car, walking through alleys in the night to get to the supermarket and then eating all the food that I bought, walking through the alleys on the way home. I mean, I got very sick. I did a lot of stealing of food, a lot of writing bad checks. I mean, this really progressed. And lying. My dear parents, I couldn't hold a job because they have food at work, you know, and I couldn't go to college because there's a lot of food at college, right? There's vending machines and multiple cafeterias. So I really couldn't go to college, although my therapist thought that college and separation and an individuation from my parents would solve my eating disorder. I couldn't make it through college. And so I ended up moving home. My parents put locks on the refrigerator and the cupboards because I was like a locust. So definitely my issues were on the overeating, not the undereating spectrum of the same disease. So what happened is I ended up in a treatment center, and it was a very unprofessional treatment center, but it was 12-step. Based, and they gave me a food plan, and they told me if I threw up, I compulsively overate for 5 years, and then I compulsively overate worse, plus vomiting for 5 more years. So that's the 10 years. So when in the treatment, they said if you purge, you're out the door, no refund. And so, by grace, and also worked very hard, very diligently to study those steps, work those steps as sincerely as I could. And I had a long stay, and I was able to start. This was in 1986, and it was helpful. It was very helpful. And then I went into a different food 12-step program, sort of as my aftercare, and did that for many years. And But I always struggled with eating too much at mealtimes. So I kept going to meetings and kept doing different food related programs and kept trying to work the steps different ways. And eventually I landed in some groups that were really into the book Alcoholics Anonymous. So I worked the steps like exactly out of that book and a couple times, and actually it helped. It was helpful, things improved. And I'm kind of an eclectic seeker. And so I kept seeking, and then I found Eating Disorders Anonymous. And it felt so gentle and so loving and so common sense. And I'd always been uncomfortable with some of the rigidity that I felt in other food 12-step programs. And I've just made this my home. That's the very short version of my story. I would like to share, and I'm going to ask other people who speak, our guest speakers for the 15 weeks, to share how they work their program daily. So I'm just going to share really briefly how I work my program daily, and then I will talk about the preface of our book. So how I work my program daily is basically as soon as possible to the time I open my eyes, I say a version of the third step prayer. And I try to think about, I'm going to call my higher power, higher purpose, whatever, God. It's a word that works for me. But it certainly doesn't have to be anybody else's word. So I like to connect with God really early because I can get off track with my thinking quite easily and quite immediately. So going to need everyone except for myself. Time with God in the morning. Then I usually go to a minimum of 1 to 2 meetings somehow during the week. And I sponsor typically at least one person a day, which is a lot of people to be sponsoring, but I really get a lot out of it because as I take people through the steps, I'm doing my own steps. When I have a problem, I pause and I breathe and I turn to God as I understand Him and ask for direction. And if it doesn't come real quick, I work step 10 of this program. Okay, so also in the morning, I try to sit like for 10 minutes and I do a meditation that was given to me by a spiritual teacher. And I ask God to help me, if at all possible, to be useful on this planet in any little way. Let's see if there's anything else. So in addition to sponsoring, I'm on a couple committees and I think that's it. I decided to organize this workshop because it bothered me that we have like 50 people on the waiting list for a sponsor. And I think, well, this will give people something to do while they're waiting and some things to think about. And it was a lot more work than I thought to organize, but boy, it was like a rocket fuel boost for my own recovery. And that's just how it is with service. EDA really encourages balance. So I have to like not overdo the service, and I have got into trouble with that. But then I learned my lesson the hard way, of course, is how I seem to learn. And then I back off a little bit. I have had the blessing of having the mental obsession and the physical compulsion to abuse food and eating removed. And for that, I'm really grateful. And I really do attribute it to a combination of doing the steps and doing a lot of service, to be honest. I many years ago, I had a roommate in the program who said, do more service than is comfortable, then you'll know you're doing the right amount. I don't know if that's true or not, but I do feel the more service I do, it really strengthens my own recovery. And I spent a ton of time in this disease. Between the getting the food, the getting rid of the food, the replacing the food. I could tell you nightmarish stories about replacing the food, other people's food. You know, dealing with the bad checks and on and on. So it's easy for me to find the time to do my step work and go to my meetings and also to buy the food, chop the food, wash the food, make the food. It magically doesn't appear in my fridge, which is disappointing. And I'm not in a financial position to have a personal chef. So I have to take care of my body in that way, which it sounds so simple, but someone in EDA recommended a registered dietitian, and that's what I kind of got out of working with the registered dietitian, that the prepared food doesn't magically appear in the fridge. I like to, I go to bed early, and I get up early and I go to bed early, and I have been ending my day with some type of evening review frequently, not daily, because I often like drive myself to pass out level and I just pass out. But many days I do some type of an evening review, either using an app or free texting. And what I really like to do is list gratitudes, because I have a lot of anxiety, and that anxiety can take over my brain, and the gratitude seem to be an antidote. So that's kind of what my day looks like. I think I've made a huge effort in EDA to make friends. It is really hard, you know, without face-to-face meetings and people all over the country, but I went to the last workshop that was held out of Phoenix, and I just got a phone number here and there, and I called them, and I kept calling them until we had like a friendliness, and then maybe I would hear about someone else. And so I have a half a dozen people in EDA that I can call if I just need to talk. So I'm going to stop there, put on my new glasses that I bought for the workshop.
Beautiful.
And transition to the preface. And if anybody wanted to follow along, it's not necessary, but it's page XI11. I'm going to read you chunks of the preface and make comments. We, the members of Eating Disorders Anonymous, acknowledge our huge debt to the founders and fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. EDA has deep roots in the 12-step program of AA and the 12 traditions of the AA fellowship. Although recovering from an eating disorder is not identical to recovering from alcoholism, we wish to convey that we have only adapted the AA program as necessary, ensuring those with eating disorders can readily grasp and apply the AA founders' concepts. So, we've taken many things from AA and EDA, such as the idea of sponsorship, the 12 steps, the 12 traditions, going to meetings, the idea of fellowship, but it's really not identical, and it's going to talk a little bit more about that. In truth, some of the adaptations have been significant. The founders of EDA recognized an abstinence-first approach to recovery from eating disorders to be ineffective. So a lot of other 12-step-based food programs use an abstinence-first model, kind of like an AA would be put the plug in the jug. And the founders of EDA tried just stopping, and that did not work for them. And I believe that motivated them to find a different approach, and here we are with EDA. Thus, EDA's focus on balance and perspective rather than abstinence distinguishes it from most other 12-step fellowships. I had a really hard time with the word perspective. To me, it sounded like an architecture term. So I have researched this and talked to actually the author of this preface, and I think that perspective is a different way of seeing and thinking, almost like in art. there's this perspective, then you go over here, it's a different perspective, and I certainly needed a new perspective. EDA fully embraces the 12-step concept that recovery is a process, not an event. When recovery entails dealing with food, something we'd almost as much as air and water, any rigid approach to food-related behaviors, including thinking of food as an addiction, simply did not work for us. We think our approach is effective because it focuses our attention on changes in thinking and perspective, my side note, that leads to long-term success. So a couple of points. I hate to tell my newcomers this, but this is not a instant fix, EDA, nor necessarily fast. I call it the long game. And in EDA, we don't see food as a substance that we can just avoid, like not drinking alcohol. So fortunately, we don't see it as a food problem, but a problem with thinking and perspective. Okay, and then we go on to page Roman numeral 12. The solution we outline here is based on our personal experiences of having and recovering from our eating disorders. So again, the authors have recovered from their eating disorders, and they're basing what they're writing on experiences, not opinions. That's important to me because, you know, opinions are, you know, common. Okay, later in the paragraph it says, as a result of working these steps, we experience a transformation that enables us to gain and maintain a healthy perspective. My words, a new way of seeing and thinking. This enables us to break free and stay free from eating disorder thoughts and behaviors. Most EDA members recognize this transformation as a spiritual awakening. And then it goes on to say that you don't have to be like spiritual or religious to work this program. As a matter of fact, one thing that people really like about EDA, if they're not religiously inclined, that EDA gives a lot of other options other than God. And there'll be more about that as we go along, but there's having a higher purpose, nature, spirit of the universe, it's infinite. Some of my favorites are from friends, The Great Mystery. I like that one. Okay, EDA has no opinion. Okay, so earlier it said that we don't see it as an addiction, but now it says on page Roman numeral 13 that that if you want to see it as an addiction, you can. We don't mind that either. And then the book talks about that there's different levels of severity. Some people might have had an eating disorder for a year. Some people for 50 years. Some people might be homeless because they lost everything due to their eating disorder. Other people can be very high functioning. Okay, now the second section on page Roman numeral 13, it addresses four objections that medical professionals have to EDA. So I'm going to mention the four objections and EDA's response. So the first objection is denigrating the value of medical treatment. So all over the EDA literature, it says things like the first paragraph on Roman numeral 14. Most EDA members are eager to help newcomers find and leverage whatever support is available. And I believe at the very, very end of the preface, it says again, we acknowledge that EDA has no monopoly on recovery. Many people recover from an eating disorder without any intervention. Others benefit from medical, social, and psychological support. We appreciate and respect that a combination of support is often desperately needed. So EDA definitely does not denigrate the value of medical treatment. The next objection that they address is viewing an eating disorder as an addiction or disease absolves the individual of responsibility for addressing their condition. And I really think the only people that would have that objection would be people that are not really familiar with 12-step programs. Because the second paragraph on page Roman numeral 14, I'll just read a sentence. Rather than using the condition as an excuse for failing to exercise one's own agency to recover, all 12-step programs require members to recognize that they alone must make the decision to change. They alone must take action for the decision to be effective. Okay, objection three. 12-step programs prevents them from recognizing that their condition is treatable, creates a culture in which patients believe they are unable to fully recover. And to objection three on Roman numeral 15, it says, EDA stance is that people can and often do fully recover from their eating disorders. The last objection, you might find it humorous. I kind of did. It says that 12-step programs require a cult-like dependence on a spiritual marker of recovery. And I don't want to put a lot of time into addressing that, but I will say that even our 12 steps are suggestions. The only requirement for membership in EDA is a desire to recover from an eating disorder. Very different than any cult. Okay, if I can bring your attention now to Roman numeral page 15. This is kind of fun. In early recovery, we learn to take small risks to build trust with ourselves and others. We soon discover that this takes time and patience, and I added, and practice. So we do our best to follow the guidance we hear in EDA meetings. And here comes a classic line from EDA. Eat when hungry, stop when moderately full. Now, I had a hard time with that one. That is a hard thing to do. I think, maybe not for you, but for me. I think that you could probably write a whole chapter on this one line, but perhaps it may be more accurate, possibly, to say, make sure to eat when you are hungry. And I never liked to eat when I was hungry. If I was out and about running errands, and I was lunchtime and I was hungry, I'd like run one more errand and come home like shaking and ravenous. So in EDA, I've learned to be respectful of being hungry and work on the timings of things. Then it says consistent nutrition is essential for recovery. And, you know, I have a very orthorexic definition of nutrition. To me, like, if it's not a dark green leafy vegetable, it's not nutritious. But I've learned in EDA, but they're basically saying eat, don't not eat. Recovery is about feelings, not food, but we can't reason or build trust with binging, purging, or starving. So get consistent feeding. Don't binge, you know, if you're binging, starving, or purging, you're not getting consistent nutrition. So, of course, that's not something we snap our fingers and stop doing, but it is certainly guidance. The second bullet point, get basic needs met first. If hungry, eat. If angry, find a safe outlet. If lonely, reach out. If tired, sleep. If ashamed, talk about it. And this brings up the point of parenting to me, because in EDA, somehow, you know, you hear about inner children and parenting, but to me, like, a good parent puts the child to sleep when they're tired. A good parent makes a play date for the kid if they're lonely. A good parent feeds a child if they're hungry. And I'm not terribly sure what a good parent does when their kid is angry. I was not a very highly educated parent, but I'm sure they address it. And when I address these things, I build trust. My inner child feels like my parent is perhaps trustworthy, although I'd worked very hard for many years to prove otherwise. Now I'm proving to my inner child that I am a good parent. I'm going to skip down to the next page, Roman numeral 16. Go to 12-step meetings, read the literature, and work the steps with a sponsor. So the fellowship that this program potentially has to offer each of us is priceless, And if you're living in a place without meetings, it does take work, but it's so worthwhile. And I wish I could work the steps just by reading them. But for me, I've had a very good experience working with an EDA sponsor, and I hounded people for months. I finally got a sponsor. The literature, you know, I didn't love this book. I didn't love this book at first because I was madly in love with the book Alcoholics Anonymous. And it was hard for me, but I'm falling in love with it. And there's wonderful, as you read the website and all the literature there, there's wonderful stuff there, including a pamphlet I would recommend called Milestones and Balance. I think that's a good one to print out and carry around. Following such suggestions and relying on others' experience, strength, and hope, we may do well for days, weeks, or months, only to find ourselves right back in tired old habits that don't serve us or anyone else. Indeed, a normal recovery often involves what can seem like a distressingly long period of back and forth as we learn more about what changes are truly required. And then it goes on to say that these setbacks can be terrific growth opportunities if we are consistent about learning from our mistakes. You know, if we go into shame and secrecy, you know, a setback can be a real snowball in the wrong direction. But if we are open and honest and talk about it, you know, I've learned so much from a couple of my setbacks in particular. One, I had a fabulous job. It was the first real job of my adult life with benefits. I had a place to live. It was in Redondo Beach, which is near, it was really close to the ocean. And then I got fired. And I had been doing really well. And all of a sudden I was back binging. And I talked about it right away. I was really active in going to meetings. And I learned, and I saw that it was the resentment. It was the resentment from the people who fired me. And that was toxic for me. And I learned that I have to address my resentments. Like the program tells us, we have to address our feelings. Okay, the last paragraph on 16, it says, we in EDA don't find it helpful to count numbers of any sort. Wow. Really? So that was a shocker. And I had some big numbers of I had to let them go. I try not to talk. I try not even to mention what year I went into treatment, since we're all equal here. It doesn't matter if we've been recovered for 30 years or we were overeating during the meeting. We are all equal here. And comparison is so toxic. I heard a fifth step today, and the lady and I were talking about the toxicity of comparison. So we try not to compare. We just love each other and grow together. And I'm gonna call that a wrap of the preface. And I'm going to stop the recording and turn the meeting back over to Kim. Thank you for allowing me to talk to you.